Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. On this week's program, I'd like to talk about the Trump phenomenon, why he's receiving so much support, and also why he's receiving so much vitriolic hatred, and particularly why Trump has so much support among evangelicals. We could call this program the Evangelical Case for Trump. Bob Vander Plaats, an evangelical leader in Iowa, head of a Christian political action organization called Family Leader, said in an interview back in December that he doesn't believe recent polling that shows evangelical voters still support Trump. He said it doesn't match up with what I'm hearing on the ground. Plaats was endorsing Ron DeSantis for president. Plaats also said, I've never met a dad or a mom or a grandpa or grandma who have told me that they want their son or daughter or their grandchild to grow up to be like him, Donald Trump, and that's a big deal, unquote. But Plaats was certainly proven wrong. In the Iowa primary, Trump received the majority of evangelical votes, far better than back in 2016 when Trump lost to Ted Cruz by 12 points. Notice this leftist take from MSNBC, how Trump became Iowa's evangelical's chosen one. In a Republican electorate dominated by white evangelicals, no rival can touch him. Vander Plaats' prediction, you know, again reminds us to be careful not to project our own opinions on the rest of the public. You know, many pundits think, you know, I'm a normal guy, I think this way, so everyone else must think the same way. And so they share their opinions as if they're the consensus. And this happens both on the left and the right. The media is also amazed that Trump is winning support from Republicans, especially winning evangelical support. I mean, after all, the media has worked so long and hard to paint Trump as a felon, a womanizer, an insurrectionist, a liar, a racist. And not only is it not sticking, the more the left criticizes him and prosecutes him, the more his popularity grows. Commonly used phrase I see often in the media is that there's a lot of head scratching about support for Trump. Here's an article from Time Magazine. Why evangelicals went all in on Trump again. And the explanation offered is that Republicans believe there are barbarians at the gate, and so it's going to take a barbarian to stop them. NPR has this article, You've Got to Be Tough, White Evangelicals Remain Enthusiastic About Donald Trump. Now notice the racist pejorative, labeling evangelicals as white evangelicals, as if that's a different class of evangelicals. But anyway, quote, in 2016, there was a lot of head scratching about evangelical support for Trump, given his divorces, allegations of both extramarital affairs and sexual assault, and his insults toward women, immigrants, and others. But many white evangelicals looked past all that. Around 8 in 10 white evangelicals supported Trump in the general election in 2016, and a similar number in 2020. The article goes on to explain Trump's current appeal is that he's a fighter, and that's what evangelicals are looking for right now. Here's an article from New York Times. Times is also curious about evangelical support for Trump. The article is entitled, Trump is connecting with a different type of evangelical voter. They're not just church-going activists that once dominated the GOP. Here's an article from CNN. Why Trump's hold on evangelicals is so hard for DeSantis and Nikki Haley to break. And as we would expect, the CNN explanation for Trump's support is the education gap. That Trump is more popular with non-college-educated blue-collar evangelicals. In other words, dumb people vote for Trump, and the smart people vote for other candidates. But CNN is committing the age-old fallacy of assuming correlation is causation, plus the education gap is statistically insignificant. The Wall Street Journal has this essay, "The Trump Revolution Among U.S. Evangelicals." As evangelicalism becomes a bottom-up religion, congregations are pressuring their pastors to offer a more hard-edged political message. Unquote. Pressuring their pastors. Well, the gist of this article is that evangelicals are becoming more politically involved. And that's nothing new. And as I've often contended, why is it assumed such a bad thing when the Christian community begins to recognize their civic responsibilities? The media is fine with any other organization when they register their voters, when they get out the vote. But with evangelical political involvement, the secular and the religious left despises this new activism, claiming that Christians are supposed to focus on heaven, personal spirituality, and wholeness. But if you notice, this criticism toward evangelicals involved in politics most often comes from the religious crowd who are pro-abortion, pro-LGBT, pro-statism. They're the ones who are flying rainbow flags in front of their churches. However, when those on their own side, the religious left, involve themselves in politics, well, that's just fine. They're viewed as simply doing their civic duty, promoting social justice. So in this, we discover that their criticism really isn't about this issue of Christians involved in politics. That's just a smokescreen for their opposition to biblical conservative values. And we know that if a Democrat candidate had the exact same bluster as Donald Trump, the media and the religious left would call him down to earth, humorous, a great man of the people. I mean, look how they cover for Joe Biden, who has said and done just as many offensive things as Donald Trump, but we don't hear a word about that in the media. Don't be naive. It's not about Trump's bluster or his personality. They hate his party and they hate his politics. Trump is no different than any other politician. Have you ever listened to the offensive rhetoric coming from Hillary Clinton, Maxine Waters, Adam Schiff, Chuck Schumer? Anyway, let's get back to the subject of evangelicals and Trump. There are some conservative evangelicals who are not supporting Trump in 2024, such as Wayne Grudem, writer, speaker, professor of theology at Phoenix Seminary. In an article he wrote for Newsweek, he called for Trump to drop out of the race. But Grudem did say he wasn't standing against Trump. He simply thought that since Trump was so polarizing, Trump would lose to the Democrats in the general election, so we need to support some other Republican candidate. And this is where a lot of evangelicals are at. They're not opposed to Trump being president. They will vote for him if he makes it to the general election. But they imagine that since Trump has been so demonized by the media, and he has so much baggage, that another candidate who is just as conservative will be more appealing to swing voters who we need to win the election. And this is Nikki Haley's campaign stump speech. That yes, Trump is very popular with the diehard conservative Republican base, but he can't win in the general election. And the contention of Haley is that that's why we had all of these Republican losses in the midterm election. Not only does Nikki Haley believe this, but all of her millionaire supporters, they don't want another 4 years of a Democrat in power. And they think that Trump alienates too many people. And so Haley apparently has a better chance in the general election. Well, here's another case of people living in their own bubbles, projecting their own views on the public. because the polls show that in the general election, Trump will win more votes against the Democrats than would DeSantis or Haley. Now, earlier polls had Haley up, but the more she campaigns, the more her political support dwindles. Here's an article from The Hill. In the general public, Haley leads Biden by 4 points, but Trump leads Biden by 7 points. How could that be? Well, because the voters Trump brings in from outside the Republican Party, those blue dog Democrats, are greater in number than those he loses from those who are offended by his persona. Who would have thought? The polling shows that Trump is actually the Republican candidate who has the best chance of beating the Democrats. The illusion, the fantasy, is that the public is going to go over to the Republican side if we just get Trump off the ballot. Not so. So my point is, there is a minority of evangelicals who are not supporting Trump for political, pragmatic reasons, because they don't think he can win. Maybe they've been listening to the media too much. You certainly need to step out of their social bubble and learn some additional facts about the voting public. Now, there is another class of professing evangelicals who oppose Trump on moral grounds. Let's talk about them. People like David French, Russell Moore with the SBC, Mark Galley with Christianity Today, Max Lucado, Eric Erickson, Robert George. Yet there are still many more evangelicals who support Trump, like Franklin Graham and Robert Jeffries and Eric Metaxas and Charlie Kirk. But these never Trump evangelicals believe they have some sort of moral, biblical imperative to oppose Donald Trump. In reading their arguments, they see Trump as some sort of demonic infiltrator, sent to destroy conservatism and the Republican Party, that Trump is deceiving conservatives, that is, those conservatives who do not have as much biblical spiritual insight as these never-Trumper evangelicals. And yes, their opposition to Trump does come across as elitism, condescending, self-righteousness. One individual that I want to point out as the poster child for evangelical opposition to Trump is Tim Alberta. You may never have heard of him, but he's the son of a conservative pastor. He became a writer for National Review, then went on to write for Politico, and now he's with The Atlantic. And he constantly writes articles against Trump and Trump's evangelical supporters. He writes that Donald Trump is on the wrong side of the evangelical right. Trump is toxic. On Twitter, Alberta writes, "The evangelical church is idolizing America at the expense of its witness for Jesus Christ." Phil Vischer with VeggieTales, who's also a never-Trumper, interviews Tim Alberta in a YouTube entitled, "How Fear and Greed Corrupted American Evangelicalism." Tim Alberta has out 2 books. First, "The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory: American Evangelicals in an Age of Extremism," which is all about his claim that evangelicals have put the country over God. And a second book, "American Carnage, on the Front Lines of the Republican Civil War and the Rise of President Trump," which is all about how the Republican Party has been taken over by this terrible man, Donald Trump. Alberta writes in The Atlantic, "Despite being a lecherous, impenitent scoundrel, the 2016 campaign was marked by his mocking of a disabled man, his xenophobic slander of immigrants, his casual calls to violence against political opponents. Trump has won a historic 80% of white evangelical voters. As a believer in Jesus Christ, and as the son of an evangelical minister, raised in a conservative church and a conservative community, I have long struggled with how to answer this question, why evangelicals support Trump." Well, in an interview, he explains why he believes evangelicals are going for Trump. Quote, love for America has become a religion for some evangelicals, with Trump seen as a religious leader. What we see with Donald Trump, his continual dominance among these voters in certain quarters, this cult-like attachment to him, it transcends anything political. It transcends anything sociological. This is a religious fervor that many of these people have, a religious devotion that they're demonstrating to him. It's something we've never seen in politics before, unquote, Tim Alberta. Now, granted, if Tim Alberta's evangelical church experience involves constantly running into political hotheads who think Trump is the savior, you know, it's understandable that he would assume the church has been taken over by politics and Trumpism. I mean, maybe that's the way it is in a few Bible Belt churches, but that's not my experience. And I believe I probably have more experience in these things than Tim Alberta, even in attending multiple Turning Point USA pastor summits and attending many Family Research Center Watchmen on the Wall conferences. You know, I don't see any rabid, blind, sycophant support for Trump or any other candidate. Instead, there is very thoughtful, measured theological discussion. Evangelicals have not been duped by the lure of political power to save the world. In fact, evangelical ministers constantly speak against going down that road. Tim Alberta might be projecting his own local personal experience on the whole evangelical church, just because they support Trump and he doesn't like Trump. He may be creating a straw man because of his own personal issues and bias. Tim Alberta, like many of these never-Trump evangelicals, appears to make very convincing arguments until challenged. And the best refutation of Tim Alberta comes from Tim Graham, who is with Newsbusters. Graham's article is entitled, Tagging Evangelical Christians as Polarizing Extreme. And that's what Alberta calls evangelical Trump supporters. And the point Graham makes is to ask the question, why is Tim Alberta in a crusade against evangelicals, calling them extreme, calling them too politically involved, given all of the political evils being perpetrated by the left? I could compare it to someone opposing the American allies in World War II by contending that these Americans are being too political. They're being too patriotic. They're wrapping themselves in the American flag. They're idolizing America. And they're being too harsh in their rhetoric against Adolf Hitler. Or by someone contending that the American military response must be wrong because some American soldiers, they go to the bars and they go to brothels. So the American cause must be wrong. You know, why would someone at that time criticize the Allies, making it seem like there are all of these evils within the Allies, and then tacitly giving support to communists and Nazis? The question is, why are never-Trumpers like Tim Alberta criticizing evangelicals when the focus should be on the far greater perversions being perpetrated by the left? They're killing babies. They're sexually mutilating children. You know, it could be compared to a reporter in 2000 BC who is silent about all the perversions in Sodom and Gomorrah, but spends all of his efforts criticizing Abraham and Lot. Now, Lot wasn't a good father, and Abraham had an illegitimate child with his servant girl. And really, that's a very sound argument against Tim Alberta's position. Tim Graham writes the following. In a previous epoch, Tim Alberta was a reporter for National Review, one of too many National Review Cubs who later joined the liberal media zoo. Alberta is now with The Atlantic, one of America's most intense producers of frothing leftist drivel. It seems like every leftist network has welcomed Alberta to trash conservative Christians through his latest book, The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory, American Evangelicals in an Age of Extremism. It's touted as Alberta's deeply personal examination of the divisions that threaten to destroy the American evangelical movement. Wait, no one in these interviews asks about the polarizing cultural extremes on the libertine left. Alberta was bitterly angry at his pastor father for voting for Trump in 2016. So what kind of a Christian is a Hillary Clinton backer? Why is a pro-abortion division in evangelicalism not threatening to destroy it? Alberta and his media helpers can't seem to find the cultural context of our time. The arrival of same-sex marriage, naturally followed by twerking drag queen performances for children, and graphically sexual books in school libraries, and gender-affirming care for minors. Are these not reasons for Christians to feel something is slipping away? Is nothing extreme about that? Do Alberta's model Christians offer any remedy or resistance to these trends? No one is asking Alberta that question, unquote Tim Graham. So, many journalists and pundits like Alberta end up criticizing more the godly than the ungodly. Christians are not perfect. 1 Corinthians 1:26, God has not chosen the wise. God has not chosen the mighty, the noble, but he has chosen the weak of the world to shame the strong. He has chosen the base things of this world, the despised to nullify the things that are. Let's not be elitists. A compassionate, understanding Christian realizes that even though Christians, evangelicals, sometimes misspeak politically, sometimes are not very careful in their rhetoric, nevertheless, they have the right emphasis. So why be critical? You know, I see this all the time in young people raised in Christian homes, second-generation Christians, who begin to take their blessings for granted. In their pride and in their self-righteousness, which they don't see, they focus on all the faults they see in the Christian community because they've never experienced a leftist, godless environment where there is far more evil and far more hypocrisy. So much so that it makes the idiosyncrasies in the evangelical community look like nothing. For example, I spent 10 years in public school. And I was tired of the drugs, the violence, the atheism, the spirit of evil that enveloped the school. So after I came to Christ, the summer of my sophomore year of high school, I realized that the public school environment was bringing me down. And I needed to get out and I needed to learn about God. So my junior year, I transferred to a Christian high school. It was great. Jesus Christ and truth were exalted. The people were so nice, but I found in some of my classmates who had been attending Christian school since kindergarten that they were always complaining. They were always finding fault. They were never thankful. And my guess is that they were living in an ivory palace, never having experienced real evil. And if they did, they would be kissing the doormat of that Christian school. Let me conclude with a theological explanation for evangelical Trump support. In Scripture, we often see God raising up some very rough characters to take down evil in order to help his people, the church. God often uses rogues to do the dirty work that needs to be done. Now, it's not that the people of God support the behavior of these individuals, but they're humble enough to recognize that God uses sinners. For example, the Saxon prince, Frederick III, who defended Martin Luther from the persecutions of the Holy Roman Empire. By all accounts, Frederick was not a serious Christian. And the Roman Emperor Constantine, who legalized and protected Christians in the Roman Empire, he was actually a brutal warrior emperor. Now, biblically, who am I talking about? Well, men like Samson, who went down to the Philistines to hook up with wild women. He also liked to visit with a prostitute named Delilah. And this certainly upset Samson's godly parents. Judges chapter 14, verse 4. However, his father and his mother didn't know that it was of the Lord, for he, God, was seeking an occasion against the Philistines. And there are a lot of people who do not recognize the Samsons of the world. People who are raised up by God to defeat evil. You know, people like Winston Churchill, who was a smoker, a drinker, and a womanizer. There's also Jephthah. The Israelite elders couldn't find a man brave enough and tough enough to deliver them from the Ammonites. So they passed by all of their own men and put Jephthah in charge, even though he was previously thrown out of Israel and he surrounded himself with worthless fellows, Judges 11. By the way, both Samson and Jephthah are mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11 as men of the faith. And then there's Jehu, who was a tough, no-nonsense military commander. He completely took down the house of Ahab and Jezebel and all of their Baal worship. And one of the first things Jehu did was to get support from the conservative Jehovah worshipers in northern Israel, particularly a man by the name of Jehonadab, who was a leader of the conservative Rechabites. 2 Kings chapter 10. Now, when he had departed from there, he met Jehonadab, the son of Rechab, coming to meet him, and he greeted him and said to him, "Is your heart right, as my heart is with your heart?" And Jehonadab answered, "It is." Jehu said, "If it is, give me your hand." And he gave him his hand, and he took him up into his chariot. He said, "Come with me and see my zeal for the Lord." So he made him ride in his chariot. Jehu rides into the capital, the city of Samaria. And the queen Jezebel puts on makeup, fancy clothing, and she greets Jehu from the tower. She says to Jehu, "Is all well with you?" And Jehu says to her servant standing beside her, "If you're on my side, throw her out the window." And so they throw her to her death. Jehu rides over her body with his horses and chariots and leaves her there for the dogs to eat her body, thus fulfilling the word of the prophets that the dogs would eat her body. And Jehu would later call her that cursed woman. So how's that for toxic political discourse? Later, Jehu would call for all of the priests of Baal to gather for a great feast in their honor. But he would lock them in their temple, send in his troops, and slaughter them all. Now, we recognize that God will use evil to punish evil, and in such cases, we do not support either evil, but stand back and let God do his work. But in the case of Jehu, it was actually the prophets of God who anointed Jehu king, both Elisha and Elijah. And once Jehu was anointed by the prophets of Jehovah, then he had the clout to organize a coup against the regime of Ahab. His support from the church at that time was very instrumental. His support was coming from the 7,000 in northern Israel who didn't bow the knee to Baal. Now, I'm not saying that all evangelical voters have a completely developed theology concerning the way God uses and channels civil authority. But the evangelical support for Trump is because Christians do not get from the Bible a pansy view of Christianity. There are real evils in this world that need to be dealt with harshly. And Christians understand what God often uses to stop evil. Now remember, this is in the realm of civil government, not in the realm of the church. Civil government is given the power of the sword. They are to be the ministers of God, being avengers against those who practice evil, Romans chapter 13. This is just the Christian community asking the institution of the state to do what God has called the state to do. Punish evil. In a recent video, Trump lays out his 10 steps to dismantle the deep state and government corruption. Here is the video, and this gives us a sense of what is at stake.
My plan to dismantle the deep state and reclaim our democracy from Washington corruption once and for all, and corruption it is. First, I will immediately reissue my 2020 executive order restoring the president's authority to remove rogue bureaucrats, and I will wield that power very aggressively. Second, we will clean out all of the corrupt actors in our national security and intelligence apparatus, and there are plenty of them. The departments and agencies that have been weaponized will be completely overhauled so that faceless bureaucrats will never again be able to target and persecute conservatives, Christians, or the left's political enemies, which they're doing now at a level that nobody can believe even possible. Third, we will totally reform FISA courts, which are so corrupt that the judges seemingly do not care when they are lied to in warrant applications. So many judges have seen so many applications that they know were wrong, or at least they must have known. They do nothing about it. They're lied to. Fourth, to expose the hoaxes and abuses of power that have been tearing our country apart, we will establish a Truth and Reconciliation Commission to declassify and publish all documents on deep state spying, censorship, and corruption. And there are plenty of them. Fifth, we will launch a major crackdown on government leakers who collude with the fake news to deliberately weave false narratives and to subvert our government and our democracy. When possible, we will press criminal charges. Sixth, we will make every inspector general's office independent and physically separated from the departments they oversee so they do not become the protectors of the deep state. Seventh, I will ask Congress to establish an independent auditing system to continually monitor our intelligence agencies to ensure they are not spying on our citizens or running disinformation campaigns against the American people, or that they are not spying on someone's campaign like they spied on my campaign. Eighth, we will continue the effort launched by the Trump administration to move parts of the sprawling federal bureaucracy to new locations outside the Washington swamp. Just as I moved the Bureau of Land Management to Colorado, as many as 100,000 government positions could be moved out, and I mean immediately, of Washington to places filled with patriots who love America, and they really do love America. Ninth, I will work to ban federal bureaucrats from taking jobs at the companies they deal with and that they regulate. So they deal with these companies and they regulate these companies, and then they want to take jobs from these companies. Doesn't work that way. Such a public display cannot go on, and it's taking place all the time, like with Big Pharma. Finally, I will push a constitutional amendment to impose term limits on members of Congress. This is how I will shatter the deep state and restore government that is controlled by the people and for the people. Thank you very much.
This is the real reason why the left hates and fears Donald Trump. He's a threat to their power and their comfortable gig. And notice how the leftist media is reacting to this. This is the worst thing that could possibly happen. New York Times article entitled, "Trump has a master plan for destroying the deep state. This is not an empty threat. He has a real and plausible plan to utterly transform American government. It will undermine the quality of that government, and it will threaten our democracy." CNN. Trump's radical second-term agenda would wield executive power in unprecedented ways. A massive operation to detain and deport undocumented immigrants. A purge of the federal workforce of anyone deemed disloyal. Wielding the power of federal law enforcement against political enemies. As he seeks to return to the Oval Office, former President Donald Trump and his allies have promised a sweeping transformation of the federal government that would wield the executive branch's power in radical and unprecedented ways. To me, that sounds like what reporters for Ahab and Jezebel would say about Jehu. You know, it all depends whether one thinks the current status quo is good or evil. Maybe the swamp does need to be drained. Maybe that would be better for democracy. And that's what most Americans are seeing. NBC News. Trump zeroes in on a key target of his retribution agenda, government workers. The former president's plan to radically change the civil service is causing anxiety for career officials, in no small part because it's becoming a basic doctrine on the right, unquote. But maybe, you know, the government is bloated with many non-essential employees. The government has to borrow $1 trillion a year, 25% of the entire budget, just to make payroll. The bureaucratic greed is bankrupting our country. AP Press. Conservative groups draw plans to dismantle the U.S. government and replace it with Trump's vision. The Atlantic. The open plot to dismantle the federal government. I can't overstate my level of concern about this damage, the damage this will do, Russell Berman. So notice how the left is already framing the policy. This is the way of leftist status. You know, as in Mussolini's Italian fascism, everything within the state, nothing outside the state, nothing against the state. And the left is already creating in the media a false caricature of what conservatives want to see done in order to push back on this threat to their power. Notice these clips from Grabian.
What would a second Donald Trump term look like?
Well, he cannot be the next president. Because if he is...
You can't imagine the things that he's going to do. Mexico, Canada. We can't go to Canada because eventually Canada will become annexed to America.
And shoot visitors to the White House.
Yeah. That means he can shoot the First Lady.
We're going to see violence the likes of which we didn't even see on January 6th.
Make it illegal to run against him, to throw his opponents in jail, to shut down the media.
He will make himself into the Führer, and he will make everybody raise their hand and salute him.
Using martial law against the American people.
Terminate the Constitution.
To rewrite the Constitution.
Create mass internment camps.
Throw everyone into Gitmo.
Might be sent to jail, or their rights might be suppressed, especially minority groups in society.
You might have any number of things happen to you and your family.
Every one of us, our freedom, our liberty, none of us is safe.
He's going to have people around him executing against an enemy's list.
Assassinate generals.
Ordering troops to attack American citizens.
Trump's very well-armed and extremist base will try to kill people.
He's going to basically burn the house down.
He will unravel the institutions of our democracy.
Draw similarities between Mussolini and Hitler.
Adolf Hitler and Benito Mussolini.
Makes Donald Trump even more dangerous.
Wants to take away your vote.
Senate and the House are immediately going to be paralyzed.
People will begin in their minds to censor themselves. They might say, well, maybe I shouldn't say this.
This is the end of democracy. Yeah.
I think that could be the end of our democracy.
But democracy is dead if Trump is reelected.
Cozy up to Putin that democracy will be at risk.
The absolute destruction of the Justice Department as we know it.
The Justice Department could be entirely transformed.
I am really concerned about that.
Every person who was associated with the attempted coup elevated in the administration.
If he's reelected, he will curb transgender rights.
The end of the rule of law.
Arrest political opponents.
To persecute, not prosecute, but persecute his enemies.
Take a wrecking ball to the rule of law.
He's going to make the law. Everyone else will have to follow.
A vote for Donald Trump may mean the last election that you ever get to vote in.
To go after the independent and free parts of American civic life.
He would tear down our institutions.
Purge the government
of employees.
Department by department effort to weaponize the powers of the government.
To use the military to quash protests.
Ridding the government of all democratic safeguards.
Junking American democracy as we have always known it.
That he would try to stay in office beyond a second term. That he would never leave office.
There's no question.
Trump is reelected. He won't leave.
Donald Trump will never leave office voluntarily.
And what that means is that everybody who wants us to remain a republic has to put every other thing aside and work together urgently right now to stop that from happening.
To close, let me play this clip from Donald Trump that sums up the evangelical position.
And our country needs a savior right now, and our country has a savior. And that's not me. That's somebody much higher up than me. Much higher up.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe, like, share, leave a comment below, and may Jesus Christ reign.